Hi, I'm Darla from Cintas.
Oh, thank goodness you're here. We have so much to do. I need fire extinguishers, right?
We'll place them for you and be out for regular inspection.
Great. And what about my new hires?
We'll get them into uniforms and keep them looking sharp.
What about this first aid cabinet?
Fully stocked.
It wasn't this morning.
It is now. And so are the restrooms.
Wow, Cintas really seems to know what we need.
You said it.
Oh, I'm ready!
Learn how Cintas can help you get ready for the workday. Visit Cintas.com.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, Nets Nation? I know I normally don't do this, but I wanted to record a little intro for this podcast just to give you guys an explanation for why we are not talking about the Magic game. We did not forget about that one. But given tonight's result, the Nets, a semi-miraculous 112-107 victory over the defending Eastern Conference champion, Cleveland Cavaliers, we wanted to focus on this one, kind of give you a rapid react. So we're going to come back on Friday, going to give you an in-depth breakdown of what went wrong in that Magic loss, and maybe a little bit more on the X's and O's of this one. But this is just 23 minutes of me and Josh getting irrationally excited about the Nets and singing to the heavens the praises of Sean Marks. So enjoy. And welcome into a late night Wednesday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Josh, you're keeping me up past my bedtime, but I don't care. The Nets just beat the Cleveland Cavaliers without D'Angelo Russell, 112-107, the final. I'm quickly becoming one, but you're the real Nets fan here. Rapid reaction, go.
I'm so besides myself. This team is, it has a lot of heart, you know, and I have to give a lot of credit to Kenny Atkinson. Once D'Angelo Russell was ruled out, I thought there's no way we're going to win this game. LeBron with a triple-double, he's on his game. He's still the best player in the league in his 15th season, which is incredible for him. But Spencer Dinwiddie was dominant. Damari Carroll really helped the energy pick up in the first quarter. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson splashing threes in LeBron's face. What is that about? What has gotten into this Nets team, Gavin?
Yeah, the Nets actually, unless, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Josh, but they showed the graphic earlier in the game, and I didn't catch it at the end. I think they set the NBA record for three-point attempts tonight in a single game. Yeah. I'm sorry?
You're wrong, I believe.
I'm wrong? What?
I think it was the Nets record.
Three records in a single game. Well, I'm going to edit.
Yeah, so I'll fill this dead air. Spencer Dinwiddie controlled the pace of the game, hit great threes, especially when the Nets lost the lead after having the 14-point lead. The Cavs came back furiously, and the team never gave up. Spencer Dinwiddie was hitting big shots. Damari Carroll hit a huge three, and obviously a late scare at the end with not being able to hit your free throws. Nets got lucky on a J.R. Smith when J.R. Smith missed a wide-open three, but in the end, the team made just enough plays to kind of get that win. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, as I mentioned, had a huge block on LeBron also in transition. That was really nice to see. And showed that it's been to more talented players like Jeremy Lin and like D'Angelo Russell are out of the lineup. The infrastructure that Kenny and then Marks has put in place, system shooting a lot of threes, sharing the ball, moving without the ball, really will keep them in the game for definitely most of the season, especially when they're going up against teams that they're not as talented against. Five games in a row, every game's been really close. Even the Indiana game, the defensive execution wasn't there, but the Nets still competed. Gavin, how are we doing on that three-point?
Yeah. You were right. But the Nets were darn close. The all-time NBA record was set by the Rockets last year when they took 50 in a game. The Nets, in a regulation game, taking 46 tonight, hitting 17. And you know Kenny Atkinson, with him, the strategy going in, was just on a team that was at such a talent deficit without D'Angelo Russell. The plan was just to take as many three-pointers as humanly possible, create as much variance as possible. This is likely what you would have seen if the Houston Rockets had managed to get past the Spurs last year and had been able to match up with the Golden State Warriors. Instead, we get a micro version of it in the regular season with the Nets and the Cavs. And you know what? It somehow miraculously ended up working out for them. There was a point earlier in the game where there was something like 3 for 26, again finishing 17 for 46, hitting 37% of them. The standouts shooting the three ball, Alan Crabb coming off a night where he was ice cold, 4 of 10 from three. Joe Harris, and this is one of my favorite little things in the game, he was matched up with Kyle Korver a lot, a guy he extremely generously gets compared to by some of the more delusional Nets fans, but he did a good job.
No, no Nets fans are delusional. How dare you say that?
Okay, I'm talking about myself. But he was really good in that matchup tonight, going 3-7 from behind the arc, and then Dinwiddie, your player of the game, I believe, 4 of 8 from behind the arc, and he made some big ones. The one that really stood out to me as being special was when the half was running down. 33 seconds left. He was smart enough to know that the Nets needed to go 2-for-1, or at the very least, that was the most efficient option. And he just charged down the floor and stuck one in a Cavs player's face. And it was special to see just that awareness, and the fact that he hit the shot was almost gravy.
Yeah, he's just really controlled the pace, and that's what you like to see from a player like him. Never gets ahead of himself, and even in this kind of moment where he's never really been asked to be the starter, more just like the complimentary player, he did not look like he was afraid of the moment, and that's really what you want to see. Also, Caris LeVert, his three-point shot hasn't been falling all season, and it certainly wasn't falling tonight, another 0-5, but I thought he had some good moments getting to the basket. He's great at hanging in the air for the extra split second to allow the defender to blow past him, and he's a guy that I really think that has a lot of promise as a scorer, and then if he can get that jump shot working, good luck to the rest of the teams in this league, because he's going to be a lot to handle.
Yeah, I wrote down in my notes, his three-point shot, maybe not his jumper overall, looks a little bit broken, frankly. He was almost...
He's just aiming it.
It's yeah.
Like pushing it.
Yeah, it looked like he was almost shooting it with two hands at points. On the season, he is shooting just 19% from three, obviously.
I think that was before the 0-for-5 game tonight. So
no, that's what the 0-for... I mean, that obviously didn't improve it, but yeah, that's up to date. Yeah, regular season total 3-for-16 from behind the arc, and yeah, it just doesn't look smooth at all right now. But I got really fired up by some of the plays he had tonight. I think this performance, even again, the shooting wasn't great, 5-of-14, should be really encouraging for Nets fans. He was just aggressive going to the basket, and you saw he kind of recognized the vacuum, D'Angelo Russell not playing left, and he took advantage of it, attacking the rim relentlessly, and he just wasn't scared to go at this team that's made the last three NBA finals and was just relentlessly attacking. And I think him and Dinwiddie, I mean, it's hard. I guess it's hard to say a source because everyone really played like it. But if I had to give credit to anyone, those two really set the tone for this game, that the Nets weren't going to back down. They were going to fight, and they were going to scrap, and they were going to try and land as many punches as they could on this Cavs team, even with their total inability to stop LeBron James. I think that's kind of what got them through that one.
Yeah, I'll also give a shout-out to Damari Carroll. The team had just had 2 points in the first 5 minutes, and then it was his banked three that kind of got them going and got the energy brought back into the building. Also, a shout-out to Trevor Booker. He didn't have a great game against Orlando, kind of not playing in control, but I thought he did a really nice job tonight. Obviously, he needs to make at least one of those two free throws at the very end, but he was doing a good job keeping balls alive. Also, had 4 assists. One that I want to highlight is when he grabbed the rebound, pushed it up the court, and maybe last year he would have just taken it in and gone wildly out of control, maybe drawn a charge, but instead he kicked it out to Joe Harris for a wide-open three, and just playing within himself and using his good handle for someone his size to his advantage and not as a detriment to kind of get him out of control. I think that's something that we're seeing from him, and it's great to see him bounce back after a poor game last night.
Yeah, and you can say the same thing about Allen Crabbe. We already gave him a shout out. One final guy who really, actually, I want to mention Damari Carroll too, so we'll get to him. But one guy who really stood out to me, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, 5 of 12 on the floor, 2-for-2 from three, 7 of 8 from the charity stripe, all added up to 19 points, 6 rebounds, 3 blocks, including one just ridiculous one on LeBron James and giving him a little bit of a taste of his own medicine with a chase down and a steal for him. And I just can't get over the fact, and this is coming from someone, Josh, you could probably speak to it better, who didn't watch a ton of Nets basketball last year, but from what I did watch, he just looks like a completely different player with the confidence shooting that jumper, and you really see it. He's not on the right side of the floor a lot, and I think that's kind of strategic on Kenny Atkinson's part, because with the way he lines it up, and it's so in front of his face, it really does seem like it's easier for him to shoot from that left side, but when he is on the left side, and even when he's behind the arc, he doesn't even think about it. It looks so smooth coming out of his hands, and it's always, even when he misses, it's always on the right trajectory and has kind of a feathery touch to it that it hadn't had in past years. And I think having that jumper, as it would hypothetically for so many of kind of those tweener defensively oriented players and guys who are just known as really good athletes, it has totally opened up his game. And you can tell, even when he doesn't shoot exceptionally well, and tonight he was solid, not great, he's so much more confident as an offensive player.
Yeah, I think one of the big things that you touched on was the confidence. And if he misses one, he's not afraid to go back down and shoot another because he has confidence in himself and drained a couple of threes tonight. I think someone, I saw it on Twitter somewhere, that it was only his third career game with multiple made threes. So that's clearly a good sign. I think, yeah, he's just playing hard. His defense was pretty good. I think the Nets' pick-and-roll defense and their communication wasn't as good in the second half, and a lot of guys were – both guys were going with LeBron James in the pick-and-roll and leaving Kyle Korver wide open from three a lot of times, and you'd like to see that miscommunication kind of be tightened up a bit. And Korver certainly isn't the guy that you want to be leaving open. But I thought the team played really well as a whole, playing hard, picking up the slack for each other. A lot of guys guarded LeBron, and no one was great, I'd say, but there were definitely individual moments by each guy where they were definitely pretty solid. And let's also give congratulations and a mazel tov to Sean Kilpatrick, new father. His girlfriend kind of gave birth to their
girl. That's the most awkward way to phrase that.
No, right, I know, because I was trying to think if
is a boy or girl?
He had a son or a daughter.
Yeah, yeah, that's
pretty fair. Sure it's a daughter.
She kind of gave birth to him. Yeah, go ahead.
So congrats to Sean. He made his season debut tonight. What'd you think of Kilpatrick?
Yeah, not really making a huge impact. He hit one nice pull-up jumper, but that was the only shot he'd make of the night, going one of six from the floor. I like that he made, it seemed, at least, even though he only had one assist, a little bit of an extra effort to move the ball and not really detract from the guys on the floor. That being said, he was a minus 10 for the game, one of only three of the 11 Nets, excuse me, that played tonight to finish with a negative plus minus. And you can see, despite his individual talent as a scorer, why he's out of the rotation. And he's just not really a clean fit with what Atkinson is asking this team to do, and that's to play five out basketball and move the ball, and not just move the ball, but constantly pass up a good shot for a great shot. And that's, and again, this isn't a criticism of the guy as a person, but he's just not really willing to do that, and that's not really his game, and right now it doesn't really fit with what the Nets want to do. So I think it's smart to keep him out of the rotation. That being said, big time shout out to him for having I think that's his first kid. And
I completely agree with you on that point. He definitely looked very awkward and out of place. I think last year he had the ball a lot, and he was kind of asked to score and create shots, and the Nets team this year, they have a lot more guys that are capable of doing that, and he looked pretty awkward running the pick and roll. Didn't know which pass to make exactly. Was crossing, was dribbling back over, hit the roll path of his man, which is something that you never want to do, and kind of ruins the spacing and makes it an awkward fit, especially with Jared Allen, who's kind of figuring out how to roll to the rim with all these different guys. So I think, honestly, Kilpatrick won't be on this team after the trade deadline. I think he can be better served going to a team that really needs his shot creation and isolation scoring. And I think he was the first signing ever that Sean Marks made. So he's kind of has a little note of history with the Nets, but I think his time, he doesn't really have a role on this team, and he's a talented guy, a hard worker, and I'd like to see him on another team. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
No, I'm 100% with you. Just because I was going to do this at the end, but just because you mentioned him, I want to give a quick shout out to Sean Marks, because that was my big picture kind of takeaway watching this game. Just like, how did this guy put this roster together with no first round picks coming in, or I guess he had the one from the Celtics, but none of his own first round picks coming in, a destination that was totally unappealing for free agents, not really starting off with a great base of talent. And we were talking off air before this, and neither of us is really set on the idea that the Nets are going to make the playoffs despite such a strong start. But again, this was a team built out of the scrap heap. And we saw squads like the Sixers try to do that over the last 4 or 5 years and come up with maybe one or two guys that were useful players. But for the Nets to do what they've done without draft picks and find all these guys like Hollis Jefferson as a late lottery pick who looks like he's going to be a great role player. Same deal with Jared Allen, who looks like he has the makings of a great defender and potentially A really solid big down the roll. Damari Carroll, who they got a first-round pick to take on, looks like, frankly, a good starter on a playoff team with the way he's shooting the ball. And a friend of the show, Jeremy Kaplan, was just commenting on how in shape he looked. He's running all over the floor, shooting the three with more confidence than he ever has in his career. Spencer Dinwiddie, who bounced around to four, five, six different teams, totally unfazed, going against the defending Eastern Conference champs and at times matching LeBron frickin' James shot for shot. The fact that Marks could do that, It's just absolutely stunning to me. And regardless of how the season finishes, I mean, he just did an incredible job. And that's not even mentioning D'Angelo Russell, who's looking like a future all-star in the early going of the season.
Yeah, he got guys that had something to prove, whether they were kind of cast off by another team trying to make their way into the league. But these guys have really bought into to Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks' vision. And you love to see that. And it's such a beautiful style of basketball that this team plays.
Yeah. Quickly getting into the negative. I know you briefly mentioned some of the miscues on the defensive end. I was telling you before the show, I watched about 3.5 hours of Nets basketball tonight because I was also watching last night's Magic game. And I thought tonight was actually quite a bit better, even though they still gave up 107 points. Obviously, they were playing a way more talented team tonight. And I the big thing against the Magic is the Nets just had a lot of issues fighting through screens, and that led to either switches into like terrible mismatches, which Aaron Gordon destroyed, and to a lesser degree, LeBron took advantage of tonight. But more importantly, that led to guys rolling to the basket and either easy layups or kickouts to open threes. And tonight, there was clearly more of an effort made. You saw Damari Carroll in the early going of the first quarter. I forgot who it was, but it might have been Tristan Thompson setting a screen on him, and he fought right through it to stick on LeBron's hip, which is almost impossible to do considering how quick that guy is. So I saw more of an effort tonight, but there were still a lot of mental miscues with letting guys cut back door, and I don't think you could attribute it to just how young this team is, or maybe how few minutes these guys have gotten to play against LeBron, but I don't think they totally appreciated that if you give guys an inch going to the rim, that you probably can against both teams, because just most perimeter players aren't going to be able to find cutters on that thin of a margin. LeBron is going to hit him every time. He's going to hit him in stride, and those guys know how to finish. So that was something that was kind of missing, and I'm sure it was something Kenny Atkinson emphasized, but it just didn't play out in the actual game, and that was a big reason why the Cavs were able to stay in it.
Yeah, I think honestly this Cavs team might be more predictable to guard than the Magic team that the Nets faced last night, because obviously you have LeBron, but he's surrounded by shooters that are very one-dimensional. You know exactly when they set the screen that they're going to pop out for the three, and you can kind of predict what's going to happen. So when you're guarding guys like, I guess, Jeff Green or Jose Calderon, Shumpert, Korver, it's pretty one-dimensional. And I think that facing a team like Orlando last night, Aaron Gordon showed off a very diversified offensive game, and we're going to try to get into that Magic game a little bit more on Friday's podcast. But he scored 41 points and only took 4 or 5 threes. Obviously, he made all of them, but he was just getting to the basket and had free room to run as soon as he kind of strode into the lane. So this Magic team was very difficult to kind of game plan for, I'd say. But the Cavs team, obviously, they're more talented, but you kind of know what to expect from them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, with that, I think we are going to start wrapping this one up. Josh mentioned that on Friday we're going to go deeper into the Magic game. I'm going to make a post right after we finish up recording this one on Reddit for some mailbag questions. And we're going to settle some final stuff with this Cavs game because I think we both have some more thoughts. But Josh, I'd be remiss to end this before you give me your both your boss player of the game. Then I'll debut my new segment that I didn't warn you about. And then we'll finish up with what grinds your gears.
Okay, so boss player of the game, it has to be Spencer Dinwiddie. Did an admirable job stepping up for D'Angelo Russell. Hit that deep, deep three, but also hit another three where he sidestepped a Cavs defender before that, and then also a bank shot to really keep the Nets in the game and make sure that it was going to be a one-possession game with the Nets having a chance no matter what. So really good props to him. Played in control, didn't turn the ball over too much, and his defensive versatility really allowed the Nets to switch a lot, especially when he's out there with guys like Allen Crabbe and Caris LeVert. So he was just an excellent player, and I'm so happy the Nets have him under contract for about, I think, $1 million, both this year and next year. It's a bargain.
Yeah, no, what I wrote down in my notes while watching the game, this outing kind of confirmed everything that I ever thought about Spencer Dinwiddie and all the praise that you and I both heaped on him this offseason. And I was I mean, I wasn't saying it out loud, but I was kind of thinking like, all right, we have to be overrating this guy. There's a reason he bounced around. But again, for the millionth time on this podcast, and we're going to say it a million more, credit to Sean Marks. He found an absolute gem. Dinwiddie, I think, obviously it was kind of an advantageous matchup with Jose Calderon a lot of the time, but I think he showed that he is the
LeBron. More Calderon and Shumpert.
Yeah, Calderon.
Calderon and J.R. Smith.
Yeah. J.R. is a pretty good defender, but I don't know. I think he showed off that in the right situation, and this Nets team is kind of the perfect situation. He could be a starting caliber point guard in this league, and as a backup, he is frankly overqualified, and that's. And then that's pretty incredible for the Nets after Jeremy Lin's injury that they have someone who can step up into a bigger role as seamlessly as Dinwiddie seems to be able to do. And I know we're saying that now, and he's coming off two games where he didn't play exceptionally well, so we'll see what he does the rest of the season. But this one, I think, gives both of us a lot of confidence going forward that he is going to be a big part of this team. All right, a new segment I am debuting, and this is just me as a guy who's broadcast a lot of basketball over the last 4 years, but you know, that's kind of pretentious because you don't have to have any broadcast experience to appreciate the genius of Ian Eagle. So I wanted to debut, Josh, with your permission, the Ian Eagle call of the game.
You have my blessing. Excited to hear what it is.
Thank you. All right, so in this one, I have a two-parter, one for sheer excitement and one for humor. All right, so the one that really got me going, and this is what I love about Ian and Josh, I think you'd agree with this, is that he really doesn't show a whole ton of bias, and I know some Nets fans might not love that, but I generally think New York basketball fans are pretty smart, and like both of us, they appreciate good basketball regardless of which side it's coming from. So on the big dunk that LeBron had in the I think middle of the second quarter, where he showed that he hasn't really lost a step or any athletic ability, Ian was like a locomotive, LeBron James. I can't really do a good Ian Eagle. I'm thinking I don't know if we'd get sued for it, but I kind of want to see if I can cut the audio out of the game and put it into the podcast. But it was just to come up with that in the moment, and like the alliteration of locomotive and LeBron, and like just like the volume, the tone. I mean, suffice to say, the guy's a master, but he has all the tricks down.
Well, my favorite Ian call, that was a great one, but my favorite Ian call from the night was when he said the Cavaliers only have 5 points in the third quarter. Immediately after he says that, LeBron drills a three and he goes 8 points.
That was really good.
Perfect timing.
I love that. And then the other one was, and I'm sure you enjoyed this too, the bit that him and Sarah Kustak had on Wingspans, where they were just kind of talking about them, and Kustak was going on how she like went surfing and she's like 5'9", but she realized like she couldn't totally like grab the board, and she figured out that she like measured her own wingspan and she realized it was like 3 or 4 inches shorter. They were just going on and on about.
Is that possible to have that like small of a wingspan compared to your height?
I'm sorry, one more time.
Is it possible to have like a 3 or 4? Your wingspan be 3 or 4 inches shorter than your height? I feel like that's insane.
I think so. I mean, some people have really short arms. I'm going to come back next podcast with my wingspan because I think it's pretty impressive.
You have like a 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah. It might be, honestly. I have an NBA frame if I was 60 pounds of muscle heavier. Yeah, so they're just going back and forth on this. And then like Sarah's like, wow, you're like really like taking interest in this. And Ian like responded with a deadpan on wingspans. I care about them. And it was just like, it's like humor is always like, it's so subtle, but it's like, it's so like, you could tell he's like a Seinfeld fan. Is that, that's really,
yes,
like,
I was about to say, yeah, that. It's perfect.
It's exactly that tone. And the fact that he can incorporate that in so seamlessly, it's something to aspire to for young broadcasters out there. And then he finished that when Kustak went into her whole rant on being 5'9 and having a 5'6 wingspan. He ended the conversation with, you're supposed to be 5'6 and you outkicked your coverage with your height. And I thought that was a brilliant line.
Yeah, Royce to 5'9".
All right, Josh, I can't imagine you're unhappy with anything right now, but if there was one little thing, what grinded your gears in this game?
So I'm riding on cloud 9 after this win. But listen, I'm not the most optimistic person. I always like to look at things the glass half empty. And immediately after the Nets win, LeBron and his team, and LeBron kind of runs that team, as we know, he kind of tells Ty Lue what to do, whether to have Wade in the starting lineup or replace him back for JR. So LeBron and his team just walk off the court, put the ball down. I don't know if they were unhappy with the officiating or what, but they just went right into the locker room instead of giving the customary dap to the opposing team and saying hi and saying all of your hello and regards to the family and congratulating Sean Kilpatrick on his new baby girl.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And this, I had a big argument in work today with some, because I'm kind of a LeBron stan, and a lot of people at my office are the opposite. They are quote unquote haters, and they were talking about how full of himself LeBron was with that whole quote on how he knows all five positions. It did come off as like the teeniest bit douchey, but then you watch the guy like.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm defending. Hold on, give me a second. Yeah, but then you watch the guy play, and like he's not like he's just being honest. Like he does know all five positions, and he knows all five positions better than 99.999% of anyone who's ever played any of them. So I think that's a pretty fair quote. And not to get too sidetracked as we wrap up here, but I was just reading that article. There was a link to another one from a couple years back that Zach Lowe did on the Raptors tracking system. And essentially a couple years ago, right when Masai Ujiri came into the Toronto organization, they put in this system on defense that essentially had dots showing where all the offensive and defensive players on both teams were on the floor at all times. And then they had these ghost dots that essentially projected where the guy should be at all times. And obviously there'd be something of a discrepancy there because players aren't perfect and they don't always know exactly where to go. But as of 3 years ago, they said the only guy in their system to beat the dots consistently was LeBron James. And he'd essentially be ahead of where an analytics-driven computer program said he was supposed to be on defense. So if you want a gauge of the guy's genius, that's it. So I don't like that he didn't give dap to the Nets. And I think he should be the type of guy, and he generally is, like when he loses, like to pay his respects, and especially to such a young team. But I could also see why he's kind of frustrated with his current group, because as you said, he doesn't.
He was really mad at his team a lot of the night for not cutting when they were supposed to, and just general malaise, not contesting on shooters. But he did give a lot of props to Lowry Markkanen last night. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I did, which you know I love, because I was a Lowry defender going into the draft. And everyone was kind of dissing him coming in, like especially I love the Ringer in general, but like Bill Simmons and his cronies, who I say that affectionately,
remain nameless.
Yeah, who remain nameless. They kept calling him like the whatchamacallit,
the Finnish Bargnani.
The Finnish Bargnani. That was it. That was Joe House, I think.
Okay. Yeah. But he can shoot it. I mean, he's
legitimately good. I watched so much of that guy play last season, and I was a big believer. Because not only could he shoot, but he's like really well coordinated for a 7-footer, like attacking the basket and stuff. And I don't know, he's legitimately good. But anyways, to wrap up that big conversation, yeah, LeBron probably should have given some dap, should have given some props, and I bet we'll hear some stuff in the coming days. But my big takeaway from the Cleveland side was that, and I said this to you guys after the first game, like I don't think he has nearly enough help, and maybe it'll be different when Isaiah Thomas comes back and he does have that second shot creator, but that guy really isn't on the roster right now, and Kevin Love going only 4-for-13 tonight proved that out a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that Love needs to, his minutes need to be staggered with LeBron, because they desperately need that creator, especially with Wade out, especially with Derrick Rose out, because you can criticize his game a lot, but he can still get to the basket and create shots for a team that desperately needs that, excluding LeBron. So he could be a useful piece for them. Obviously, the fit's not great, but they need him to create some sort of offense. But we're getting off tracks here. This night should be about the Nets. I think we covered the Nets pretty well. And hopefully D'Lo can come back against the Knicks, and we will make it a 4-2 start.
All right. Sorry, one final Cavs note. They've given up at least 112 points in 4 of their 5 games so far. So just to the Cavs stands out there, I'd be a little bit concerned. I don't think that's going to get a lot better. Anyways, that is it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We will be back on Friday breaking down that loss to the Orlando Magic and maybe a couple more notes from this game. We're going to also try and get in a mailbag, so you can submit your questions on the post I leave on the Locked On Nets Reddit. You could tweet to the Locked On Nets Twitter account @LockedOnNets or shoot us an email at LockedOnNets@gmail.com. For Josh, I'm Gavin Shaw. Peace out.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.